Part C, Directions. You will hear three pieces of recorded material. Before listening to each one, you will have time to read the questions related to it. While listening, answer each question by choosing A, B, C, or D. After listening, you will have time to check your answers. You will hear each piece once only.
Questions 11 to 13 are based on the following talk, discussing drinking problems. You now have 15 seconds to read questions 11 to 13.
According to recent estimates, there are 9 million people with drinking problems in the United States. If your idea of someone with an alcohol problem is a person with a bottle and a paper bag, you are probably wondering where those 9 million people are. The fact is, more than 95% of the victims of alcoholism do not look like that. In the early and middle stages of the disease, they hold down jobs or are housewives and appear to lead normal lives. The early symptoms of alcoholism are very subtle and difficult to recognize. But sooner or later, they show up on the job. That woman in the office who loses her temper in the morning and happy as a clam in the afternoon may just not be a morning person. She may have a problem with alcohol. Then there is a man in the machine shop who is often actually asleep on the job. Sometimes it's a group problem, like the payday lunch group, who never make it back to the office. Or it may be the group that goes out to celebrate on the way home and stretches it out until early Saturday morning. American attitudes about alcohol are complicated and confusing. Social drinking is not only acceptable, but very sophisticated. Full-color magazine ads show rich, beautiful, and happy people socializing over martinis, champagne, or whatever the ads are promoting. It's supposed to be manly as well. Witness the classic cowboy scene where our hero tosses down straight whiskey, while the man who orders orange juice is laughed at. Conflicting social and moral attitudes about drinking make it difficult to see alcoholism clearly as a disease. The person who has lost control over drinking, however funny, sophisticated, or infuriating he may be, is ill.
Questions 14 to 17 are based on the following lecture on memory. You now have 20 seconds to read questions 14 to 17.
It is difficult to imagine what life would be like without memory. The meanings of thousands of everyday perceptions, the basis for the decisions we make and the roots of our habits and skills are to be found in our past experiences, which are brought into the present by memory. Memory can be defined as the capacity to keep information available for later use. It includes not only remembering things like arithmetic or historical facts, but also involves any change in the way an animal typically behaves. Memory is involved when a rat gives up eating grain because he has sniffed something suspicious in the grain pile. Memory is also involved when a 6-year-old child learns to swing a baseball bat. Memory exists not only in humans and animals, but also in some physical objects and machines. Computers, for example, contain devices for storing data for later use. It is interesting to compare the memory storage capacity of a computer with that of a human being. The instant access memory of a large computer may hold up to 100,000 words ready for instant use. An average U.S. teenager probably recognizes the meaning of about 100,000 words of English. However, this is but a fraction of the total amount of information which the teenager has stored. Consider, for example, the number of faces and places that the teenager can smartly recognize on sight. Questions 18 to 20 are based on the following conversation on family members in Britain. You now have 15 seconds to read questions 18 to 20.
Over the past 50 years in Britain, we have seen a major shift in the number of elderly parents being cared for by their own children, compared to those being looked after by either state or private old people's homes. I asked Polly Trainer, a welfare officer of some 40 years' experience, and herself a senior citizen, how this change has come about.
I believe there are two major factors. The first is a decline in the extended family. 50 years ago, offspring would often be born into a family composed not just of mother, father, sisters, and brothers, but also grandmother, grandfather, and sometimes the odd uncle or aunt. Parents would look after children in turn. One of the children would look after the parents.
And the extended family has given way to what is known as the nuclear family.
That's right. The smaller family means it is no longer practicable in most cases for younger families to look after their elderly parents, frequently due to the pressures of work. Often, the elderly need someone to be constantly with them. And in the modern family, with both partners out away at work, the elderly would be left at home alone for most of the day.
Is that the only reason why families today are unwilling to look after their elderly parents?
Well, no, and that brings me on to the second major factor. 50 years ago, it was expected that one of the children would look after the elderly parents. It was a tradition.
But now the young are no longer expected to look after their parents.
Right. As we drop the tradition and it became less and less of a responsibility on the young to look after their parents, so the elderly have begun to feel guilty that it really would be an imposition on their children if they were to move in with them. A number of elderly people I have talked to told me they were invited by their children to move in with them, but selected instead to go into an old people's home.
And now, with old people's homes being so much more comfortable than they used to be, there isn't the necessity.
Right. So long, of course, that they have the money to go into a home.
That is the end of Part C.